I'm Alex Hirsch, and I'm a real boy.
Hi, I'm Alonso Ramirez Ramos, and I was the storyboard artist on this episode.
Hi, I'm Matt Brawley, and I was actually the director of the episode.
And also, I think the person who boarded this
scene. Yes, I tried to board the cold opens and the resolutions of many episodes.
I didn't know when I wrote Mabel gets her braces stuck in a screen door how it would work, but you made it work.
Absolutely.
You made it happen.
This was one of my favorite things to board on the show, actually, this cold open. This is our first look at Seuss's kind of like normal life.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
First time we see his house.
We'd gotten a glimpse. Well, we'd seen his house in Gideon Rises, but I don't think we ever returned, and we never saw, what does he do? He plays video games. He's sweet to his abuelita.
Does abuelita's hair.
This is our second reference. Cousin Reggie was literally invented for Fight Fighters. It was like, oh yeah, my cousin Reggie told me about a teen he got in a fight one time, and then we're just like, keep it. He's got a cousin Reggie now forever. But you got to figure out what cousin Reggie looks like.
Yeah, and everyone in Seuss's family looks like him.
Dude, I feel the stakes, man. Abuelita being like, you need a girlfriend. I'm like, I need a girlfriend.
I love this joke.
What was the joke?
Like the with grandpa.
He's not there.
He's not there.
Yeah. I gotta give Mark Rizzo props. Mark Rizzo wrote this on this episode, and that's his joke, and it's a killer joke. It's one amazing. Of the best in the episode.
Love it.
So Seuss and the Real Girl came from a few things. Partially, this came from we wanted to do a Seuss episode. We feel like going into season two, each one of these characters, if we can, we want to do an episode where we see a little bit more about who they are and what their lives are like. We also had such a good time working with Paul Robertson, killer pixel animator,
genius.
Fight Fighters. It was so cool that I was always looking for another opportunity to do something like that. And
huge friend and fan of the show as well.
Huge, yes, contributed so much. And I think early on, this was something I had suggested, this idea, like, maybe Seuss does a dating sim, maybe we play on some of these weird... It's not the most known trope, the Japanese dating sim CD-ROM video game.
Very specific.
Like, anime is very mainstream, but that's kind of weird, which is kind of why we wanted to do it. This section...
Emmy, man.
This section storyboarded by one of our funniest artists that we ever worked with, Emmy Sierga. Old Goldie was, we needed a subplot. She designed this. It was so much even more horrifying than I imagined. I'm so satisfied.
It's so good.
And this is my scream.
Is this Emmy's, is this Emmy's first?
I think this might have been her first board.
Did a fantastic job.
If not either first or second board. And there was a lot of different pieces here. Kind of, we liked this. We wanted to do a Seuss episode. We wanted to learn a little bit about his home life. Maybe, you know, give him a romantic interest. And we really loved this idea of going to Chuck E. Cheese and this idea of turning that into a horror thing. The crazy thing is, I remember being in the writer's room and saying, like, whoa, evil possessed animatronics. I don't think I've ever seen that done before. And like, as we were writing this episode, a video game called Five Nights at Freddy's was like being created, which has become this huge like video game cultural phenomenon among certain circles, this horror game series. They've made like 10 of them now about possessed animatronics from TGI or from Chuck E. Cheese. But like, this was just a parallel thought. It was the same reference. Like, I always thought Showbiz Pizza creatures were terrifying, and I wanted to do
it. It was crazy because the episode was conceived about a year before Five Nights at Freddy took off. And so, like, the insinuation, like, everybody was like, oh, this is an homage. We're like, no.
This is not an homage. We just had the same idea, you know, at a different moment. There's so many great little visual gags in this opening. Seuss with the out of order on his stomach. Seuss hiding inside the ring of all the question marks. I remember I had done a pass of this scene where I wanted Seuss's flirting to be... There's a few versions of Seuss flirting that we didn't want him to come off as creepy. And so I changed it to, your face is good, I'm a Seuss. Because I was like, what's... We want it to be clear that he so has no idea what he's doing, that he's practically a malfunctioning robot. That it's we want it to be sweet. We never want him to in any way come across as a creep or somebody who is, you know, because awkward, you know, bad flirting can be a terrible thing. And we want to make it clear that Seuss is never the aggressor. He is more frightened of anyone than they are of him.
This is a great gag there where she rags on Dipper.
And Dipper goes, wait.
He doesn't notice.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Doesn't quite notice. There's some funny
my favorite
background signs gags in here. I like there's a store called Overalls Are Cool Now, which always cracks me up.
Meet cute.
Meet cute.
No, that's like. Later.
Sue's talking about how he's been in a pig's body.
Yeah, that's amazing. Amazing.
Which is just like, it's clearly really bad advice.
Edgy on purpose.
For Seuss to talk about his experience being a pig. Like, Seuss is just, our intention with all of this was just he's basically an alien trying to flirt. He says the worst possible thing with no bad intention.
The goldy tear. Right?
Oh, the tear.
Yeah, I love
think
that.
It's oil. It's the tear's oil.
Right.
The oil tear.
Oh, no.
Some episodes, you know, there's always a main plot, which you refer to as the A story. And some episodes, there's a side plot, which you call the B story. And this episode, we did not know what the B story was or how it worked.
Oh, no.
Matt,
that was designed by Matt, Badger.
Yeah, Willie Badger. Matt, do you remember that, like, that whole idea of, like, Goldie saves him in the end? We didn't have that at the beginning. We had no idea.
Absolutely not.
I think Emmy suggested that.
I think so. This whole Badger runner B story was very, I think it was done in board stage. Like, I feel.
We all kind of added this late because we knew we needed a parallel scene. We knew what we wanted to set up that third act. We didn't quite know how we wanted it to work. Paul Shearer did a great job.
Gary is insane.
As Gary, the weird. I like that Stan is intimidated by this guy. That he's like, yeah, animatronics are a young man's game. Like, that Arrival for Stan is a more successful huckster. And no matter how dumb what he's doing is, as long as he's getting money from kids, he's better than Stan. And so Stan is really jealous. We get to see Reggie.
Oh, here's Reggie. They're cute.
Feel it, it's muscle.
Oh, no.
Beebly Boops was the brand name. We tried to be consistent with our brand names. Candy was Nyum's brand candy. Pretty much every piece of electronics was Beebly Boops brand electronics.
Oh, there's Fight Fighters.
Dr. Punchhead.
Oh, what's this?
Romance Academy 7. And we tried to put references to the other games that we've seen so far in the series.
Oh, no.
Hiding in the background.
That drawing is so
you
good.
Designed that, right, Matt?
I did,
yeah. That guy. How do you feel about that design?
I have mixed feelings. Also, the agents. We saw the agents earlier in the mall.
Oh, yeah. So the agents are, the secret agents are hidden in every single episode in the first half of the season. Sort of like in season one, we were hiding Blendin. We wanted to give something for eagle-eyed viewers.
I love this joke, too.
This is so good.
This is where we first start getting Paul's stuff. And I think, who boarded this sequence?
This is Emmy.
I think Emmy did this sequence.
Oh, yeah.
It's still Emmy.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I love this joke.
Everything kind of had plan. I'm a big fan of going to Little Tokyo, and I love Japanese culture, and I also love mistranslations of all kinds. We figured there'd be a couple mistranslations. We wanted to get... It seemed that the tropes of this are schoolgirls, cherry petals, and weird rewards for success. It seemed like, so the arc that we wanted to give Seuss in this episode is sort of like Dipper's arc actually in Fight Fighters, which is somebody has a real world problem that they try to solve in the wrong way. Like, Seuss is not wrong to want to learn to, you know, become more confident, but he's wrong to think that talking to women is something that you can game out like a spreadsheet.
Sure.
And when he finds a comfortable place where it's like, oh, I don't need to talk to people. I can just live in this fantasy world. Like, that's kind of a real problem.
Absolutely.
Right, and
this is a real thing.
I feel like he had the solution all along, if he was just himself. It's just kind of like he's going about it the wrong way and kind of comes back to a place where he's himself.
Yeah.
And he's liked for being that. And,
well, because Seuss is, and I think Wendy says at the beginning of the episode, she's like, you're a nice guy, you know, you're a funny dude, you got a pickup truck, like, you know, like, you're all right.
He'd rather hide, see,
right.
Seuss here.
But he's so, well, Seuss is, I mean, a lot of Seuss is that he is, every character in the show in some way kind of represents a comfort or discomfort with childhood, adulthood,
love
teenhood,
this joke.
Right? So, like, Seuss is an adult who's basically still a child.
Yes.
And, like, this stuff that, you know, Dipper's going through, Seuss is still going through this.
So this is all Sabrina Coutinho's section, and it was all marvelously boarded. This was her first boarding.
This was Sabrina's first board
on
this episode. And
she killed it.
She did an amazing
job.
She loves anime and knows a lot about anime tropes and about, like, the style, and was very involved in the designing of Giffeny, and really wanted to take this section.
It's Giffeny!
It's up for debate.
I love Mabel's screwed up, you can do it, Sue sweater.
I love the not Furby.
Fixin' It One is his password, which is a reference to the Fixin' It with Seuss shorts. We always imagine that's something he really did. And we love the idea.
Diary.
We were trying to think, if we're going to spend a little more time with Seuss's family, we need to give Abuelita one thing that we didn't know about That's her right. before, because she seems kind of checked out. And it was like, maybe she's just, Seuss's life is her own soap opera.
That's so accurate.
And she's creepily following the entire thing.
This is a small thing worth pointing out, but one of the girls that just ran by was actually a Make-A-Wish kid who was put into the show.
Yes.
That was a really right. cool thing. It happened about 3 or 4 times. Make-A-Wish kid would come in, meet the crew, and get a character.
The Make-A-Wish program was awesome, the way they reached out to us and connected us with fans. And, you know, it's such a scary privilege. Like,
sure.
When a kid loves your show enough, that is their wish, is that they want to see it, you want to give them everything you can.
Absolutely.
And you feel like there's nothing you can do that's enough. So we did everything we could. In this instance, we had them do a voice of the crowd. We animated yep. them. We put yep. them in the episode. We gave them a tour of the studio. And I really thank you, Matt, for doing those designs. Because
yeah.
it's
pleasure.
It's a privilege to do something like that. And I'm so glad that everyone was on board.
Yeah, the boy that said Willy Badger.
The other boy who said Willy Badger, I love you, was another one.
This is an incredible storytelling moment that Sabrina figured out. It's really amazing. This
look at that image. It's perfect.
Punch.
Perfect setup.
Just so good. Yeah. The left and the right and the.
I gotta give credit to Sabrina for being one of our rock stars. This was her first storyboard on the show, and she just like great, great storytelling.
Okay, so we're into Alonzo's section now. Alonzo.
Right. Yeah. So this is Melody's introduction, which is that character I got to also design and kind of figure out what she would look like and kind of be sort of a compliment for Seuss. And, you know, it happens so quickly that, you know, they meet, they talk about some silly things and
so genuine.
And then, you know, and the next thing she's off and, you know, but I really tried to make it that this could be a real thing, you know, and they would be a good fit for each other.
I love this sequence. I think you did an amazing job. I think Melody's design is perfect. Like, because there's something about her where she feels specific and unique. She doesn't just feel like, oh, it's obviously a girl version of Seuss. There was a version in the script, I think the very first draft of the script, where she was essentially literally just a female Seuss.
Sure.
And it felt like that's not... What would it take for Seuss to get out of this issue? It would take somebody who likes what he is when he's genuine. And what Seuss is when he's genuine is a sweet guy who, like, yeah, he's a man child. He likes the childish things. So he needs somebody who also likes childish things and is impressed by somebody's lack of consciousness about that.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Seeing him be unself-conscious, you did such a good job of boarding all this stuff where Mabel's freaking out. And she's punching.
Over a plant.
I love her. Just Mabel's so excited. They're
great.
So happy for Seuss.
I remember when Melody says goodbye, I remember... really wanting those eyes to be really perfect.
You did a draw over.
We did a draw
ones,
over.
Yeah.
She was like, this got to be a moment that resonates.
When Seuss doesn't even realize he's flirting. Like, he has no idea that he's just, like, chilling out.
Now he's got to tell Jiffany. Jiffany.
Jiffany doesn't take it well. So this was, I'd say, the biggest challenge with this episode, and it's probably my only regret with this episode, because I think it's really fun, and I think there's a lot of good comedy, and I think it's got, you know, a pretty good sort of lesson for Seuss. But I think, personally, you know, I think one of the things we struggled with was we wanted this character to sort of be an homage to these anime tropes. And there's the trope of the character who seems really sweet but actually has this, you know, this very dark side. And I think we wanted to show that this is the wrong solution. Like, Seuss shouldn't date a game. The problem is we made her an actual, it's Gravity Falls. So she is conscious. So she is kind of alive. And I think that there would have been an opportunity to give some depth to this character. But I think the feeling was, oh, like, she's this living trope. She's a living, like Rumble McSkirmish.
Right.
You know,
right.
Who himself has no depth. And so we kind of treated her like Rumble McSkirmish, just like this character who's designed to be this way.
So like Jiffany also like oversimplifies relationships and things is just, it's going to be forever perfect or you're mine or not. And then you die, you know, it's sort of like she goes to extremes and it's not a real person. So
I think, and that was our intention.
To learn to be with a real person. You know?
But I think there was a missed opportunity there. And I think there was, this episode kind of had a mixed reaction from some people because a lot of people loved it. But there was a number of people who felt that Jiffany as a character, there was a reductiveness about her presentation. And looking back on that, I see it. Like I do, if I could change anything, I think I would try to find a way to make her a little more sympathetic, and give her a better ending. We originally, and we actually storyboarded, our original ending for Jiffany was that she is zapped into one of these games and that her and Rumble McSkirmish get together. And the only reason we cut it was because that somebody came up with that idea of Stan and Goldie going to Vegas, and it was so funny. So we watched both of them and we're like, this is one of the funniest scenes in the season. We got to keep it. What's the big difference? And then a lot of people saw this episode. They're like, they killed Giffany, and all she wanted to do was be his great girlfriend. And it's one of those things where a very small decision where you're like, oh, we've got these two options. Oh, this one seems a little funnier, can be interpreted as this giant statement,
right,
when it isn't really, you know.
We could have also used more time, you know, like the story needed more time to, more scenes with her to, yeah, like really interact, and we didn't have it. So we just have to cut to the action, and right now we're in the climax. So it just needed to resolve.
Right. Well, and we thought, I think we in the writing, we said in that turn where she discovers that Seuss has found someone else, we figured if she said something to him like, no one else will ever love you, she'll so clearly be a villain at that point, because that is, she's supposed to be the spoken manifestation of Seuss's fear. Seuss's fear is exactly what she's saying, which is nobody else is actually going to like you. Only a video game could love you. So stay with what's comfortable. The feeling was, oh, well, that will be clear. So when this character who's the manifestation of that fear is extinguished, Seuss is free. But people loved Giffany. Like, she was so well animated, so well storyboarded. The voice actors did a great job.
She's adorable.
Sometimes there's something that you don't predict, which is that if everyone's really bringing their A game, people fall in love with things that you don't expect them to fall in love with.
Right. And also, I think it's implied heavily that she... what's the word? Ended a number of people.
We tried to suggest that she murdered a bunch of people. Yes. That was the other day. We're trying to say, like, she tells Seuss that no one will ever love him, and she killed a bunch of people. So when she gets defeated in the end, she kind of had it coming.
She's a bit extreme.
But people bond with characters if they see themselves in them.
Sure.
If they see a character who's heartbroken, they feel for that character, you know? I do think if I could tweak anything in the writing, I would tweak that. But I wouldn't tweak anything in the execution, the storyboards.
Sure.
This sequence.
And we love her as
unbelievable.
Crazy squirrel.
Alonzo, talk to me a little bit about storyboarding this.
I do remember having like a showbiz pizza growing up in Mexico. And I remember how weird it was.
This is so good.
And I definitely had the memories to
kind of
bring
owl.
This sequence to life.
This is magnificently boarded. Like, I couldn't have imagined giving that to anybody other than Alonzo.
Oh, no, the badger. You're about to get badgered. That's what he says, right?
Love to get badgered.
That is so mad. It's so good.
Oh, no. That's so funny.
The designs of those creatures, Robert Ryan Corey,
one of our
designers, really amazing, particularly at especially grotesque creatures, did an awesome job.
Love the specificity of the skee ball shooting at them. That was so cool.
Right.
So I loved that this is what happens when Seuss goes on a date.
This is a great shot.
Yeah, I love the way that came out. There's so much where the visuals are telling the
story.
That's
my perfect blue on that.
Deep cut.
So Seuss has a hero moment here. His desire to shut out reality has now caused him to have to face a lot of reality. And
how are we going to get into the kitchen? He just
like a penguin. Like a penguin. The only way he knows how.
I was like, can we do that?
A great solution.
Amazing. The way the slight resistance on the hand going through that arcade machine is incredible. This was so real, this fight.
Yeah, when we added the sound effects, it's like, Stan is getting really beaten up.
Oh, and here Goldie saves him.
So I think this was Emmy's idea.
I think it's Emmy.
Yeah. And it made the whole B story. It all suddenly works.
It just all came together. Because
for Stan, that's a metaphor for like, oh, this is a... whose joke was this?
Matt and I, we kind of were figuring out.
I'm gonna say it's your joke, Alonzo, but I don't.
That is your joke.
This is definitely.
Yeah,
this is my joke.
I think the shoe joke was in the script. I think that might have been Mark's joke. Apologies, other writer, if I got it wrong. But I just love that it's so specific.
I love that it ends in the kitchen. It's very specific. Pizza oven. I'll do anything you want.
We really tried to make her as villainous as possible. Yeah, so this idea that she's basically saying to him, there's not a single human alive that will care for you.
Right.
We thought this would make people turn against her, but no. They love a cute schoolgirl with pink hair, man.
And it's okay. And that is okay, too. You know, we like her, too.
Well, she's inherently tragic.
The implication it's that the what tragedy. She's going to do with that, it's like really terrible.
Is she going to jack it into his stomach? I think in the first board of that, it was more like a needle or something. I was like, that's way too terrifying.
Right, you made it a USB.
It's got to be a USB. This is all so well boarded. Every detail, like the way that the mechanism on her works.
Can't wait for the melt.
Just
dude.
The bubbling of that is amazingly well done. Paul Robertson did such
a
good job
of
that end. And at this point, a million anime fans screamed in horror. How could you kill her? She was cute and sad.
Hey, she lives.
That's true. Oh, and we do confirm in journal number 3 that the original ending of her with Rumble, in fact, has happened. That they are together now. Two one-dimensional video game characters designed just to fight and just to love, which are the two things relationships are comprised of, fighting and loving. So it'll be perfect.
Perfect.
This is she did such a good job of the voice on Melody. Like
Jillian Bell.
Jillian Bell was one of the, I would say out of all the people who came in to do voices, like the very first time she spoke the first line, it was like, you just doubled the endearingness of this character. Jillian Bell, so funny. We really tried to add little specificity to her. The idea that she has had awful dates before. Her thing with the itchy legs earlier, like she actually shaved her legs for this date because she actually likes sushi. That the entire reason for that detail was to suggest she doesn't go on a lot of dates either. And so this is important to her.
Absolutely.
And you did this ending, right?
I did the resolution. Yes. Alex, you sang this horrible song, didn't you?
I mean, that's John DiMaggio singing this song. I did we love the idea of Stan and Goldie going out on the town, and we recorded me and Jeffro, one of our writers, just got into the mic
Sabrina's
and made up a bunch of fake lyrics.
Beautiful
vignettes by Sabrina. John DiMaggio came in and did an amazing job of a Lil Wayne-esque singer. Two kings! What?